Yo, yo. Hey up. How do? Sit my, as we say in Welsh. You've downloaded Gareth Jones on Speed episode 500, part 2. Thank you. As you know, we're on a journey. Zog and I are taking Richard to some notable, interesting car-related locations. Coincidentally, both more or less in the same part of the world. Join us as Richard gets into my Citroen Cactus and we continue. Gareth Jones on Speed episode 500!
It was a solid sound, was it? The sound of a poorly built French car's door closing. Do you like the door handles, Richard? They're supposed to be luggage straps, aren't they? And that design here is supposed to be like a bit of posh luggage. Can I ask you to hold the recorder for me, please?
You can wear the headphones as well if you want. You can hear whether we're all off mic or not. I asked Zog to tell me roughly where his location is that he wants to take us to. And coincidentally, it's towards Slough.
Okay.
Which is very convenient because my location is towards Slough. So we're going to head to Slough.
Yeah.
I don't know.
We're going to find out just how much of a coincidence this may or may not be.
Yeah, it is entirely possible that
you
have
chosen the same place.
It is possible.
Yeah, I'm pretty. I'm saying there's about a 30% chance, but
don't look at my search.
All right, I'm going to look away.
I've forgotten the name of the road.
I've probably got it.
I also feel like I might know where this is, but I'm not going to say this.
Yeah,
probably shouldn't pipe up.
Is it the the headquarters of Ferrari UK, which is on the trading estate depicted in the opening titles of the UK office, which in fact features a building that looks very much like the former Leyland House here, one of these sort of glass curtain buildings, I think. And that was the exterior. I mean, obviously it wasn't shot there, because weirdly, the office was filmed in Autocar's old office in Teddington, I think.
Okay.
Autocar weren't there at the time. It was an empty office. They used a real office building to film the show in, and it was subsequently occupied by Haymarket Publishing.
Haymarket.
Fun fact.
Right then.
So,
do this. London driver,
well,
just poke your nose in.
Exactly, I was going to say. You've got to be a bit aggressive about it.
Spend a few months in North Wales and
I forget how to be an aggressive driver.
Sorry, I was trying to help. Let's see what we can do. Can we do that? Does that help?
Just watch out for the tow bar. I think it might be. Is there a tow bar on that for you?
Nope, not that I can see. Yeah. Oh, man.
I made that mistake before.
I saw a black Range Rover being driven very dangerously on the motorway on the way down, with no number plates. It's like this one, completely blacked out.
With no number plates?
No number plates, front or rear. It came up behind me, undertook people in three lanes, was weaving. I'd have reported it for a number plate to report.
Oh, now, hang on. You might be being forced into the congestion zone here.
Oh, God, no.
We'll look for the things on the road.
Time. What time is it?
It is... Quarter seven.
Okay,
you're right.
We're good. Phew.
Actually, I don't know if you are, because maybe you're allowed. There's a little. Oh yeah, look. See, as long as you don't go any beyond sort of here, but you're fine because it's after six.
I want to turn next.
Yeah, your nav's sending you.
Yeah, we're after 6 o'clock. It finishes at 6 o'clock. The congestion charge is over. Nice to see you, boys. Thank you for joining us. For Richard, thank you particularly for coming back to the programme.
Well, here I find myself in that there London, which is sort of convenient for looking at old buildings and shizzle. Oh, look.
Yes.
There's a
296. What is that? 596.
296.
296. Yeah. 596. That's the thing, isn't it, mate? You arrive in London, you see cars that you just don't see anywhere else. It's always been the case here. If ever we needed a quick and dirty episode of Gareth Jones on Speed, it is inside. Gareth Jones on Speed, all I have to do is go and stand out on the streets and do some car spotting with Zog or you or Alex, and there's always interesting stuff to see. I remember when I first came to London about 1977, seeing a Porsche 911 SC. Been very excited about that. Very excited. First interesting car to go past us on the Marylebone Road. Someone has to say something interesting.
There'll be something. There's always something.
Is it? It's an X, isn't it? Tesla Model X? Yeah.
That's a Y.
Is it a Y?
Yeah.
Oh, you got the green light. So, no, we haven't actually seen anything interesting, but...
Berlingo in front. Interesting.
Well, they're nice, aren't they?
They're practical.
I like a Berlingo.
Yeah, I almost bought one when Violet and I were together. I thought it'd be the perfect car for me to own, a Berlingo. But I never quite committed to one. Never quite. Building up on the right here, this one.
Oh, the Landmark Hotel.
Yeah.
That's one of my favourite buildings down this road in terms of old-fashioned, sort of Victorian splendour. That and St Pancras. They did a lot of detail very nicely, the Victorians.
A lot of detail.
Yeah, good architecture around here, for sure.
I met... get your hands off me, you dirty, stinking ape.
Charlton Heston.
Thank you. I met Charlton Heston there. I was interviewing him for a BBC radio programme about computers I was doing, and he just released a CD... A CD-ROM.
Oh.
Remember them? Called The Bible. It was a story of the Bible.
What?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, my God.
He did play...
he's a bit of a Bible basher.
He was, yeah. And a gun-toting Bible basher at that.
Yeah.
And the minister in the chapel that my family used to go to in North Wales was called the Reverend Trebormai Thomas. He was a Welshman from Patagonia. Not from Wales, but from Argentina. And... people used to regularly come up to him when he was on holiday, not wearing his dog collar, and say to him, "Excuse me, are you Charlton Heston?" He was a dead ringer for him. He really, really was a dead ringer. And so my first question to Charlton Heston when I met him was, "Mr. Heston, has anyone ever come up to you and said, 'Excuse me, are you the Reverend Trebormai Thomas from Holywell in North Wales?'" And he answered, "Not yet, Gareth. Not yet." Which I thought was a cool answer.
Yeah, that's good. I was hoping you were going to say, "All the damn time."
Yeah. Oh, not again.
Sick of that guy.
Oh, who is this guy ruining my life? I should shoot him. I bet he's not even a Christian. Well,
Gareth Jones on speed. Fat toys.
In our 500 episodes so far, we've produced over 325 hours of Gareth Jones on speed audio podcasts. However, episode 200 was in two parts, as was episode 400, and there was a trailer before the first ever episode of Gareth Jones on Speed, plus video episode 34, which was the video of audio episode 200 that was in two parts, means that there have been 66 video episodes of Gareth Jones on Speed. So although you may think this is episode 500 part 2, it is in fact episode 571.
Gareth Jones on Speed, episode 500.
I mean, this is not car related, but we're now on the, or coming onto the elevated section of the Westway A40 out of London. And this was meant to be part, in, I think, the 60s, of a whole sort of inner London series of faster roads.
Oh, really? They were going to be others?
Yeah, and if you look, when you get up here, well, I don't think we're going to go over it, but the White City roundabout has some little stubs on it that don't go anywhere.
Yes.
And that's because they future-proofed that roundabout, because there was supposed to be a big spur running off north up there, and then a longer spur going south, of which only a little bit exists, taking you down to the roundabout at Holland Park. But originally this was part of a big grand scheme, and when they built this, there's great archive photos online of the protests as they had to carve through housing to put this elevated roadway in. Even though it's up above, they still had to knock down houses for the legs and stuff.
Yeah.
And it was meant to go all the way up there, and so there's a little artifact, which, again, the nerd in me enjoys, and I used to drive past it all the time, just going, "I know why those little stubs are there." Because there was meant to be a much bigger road that went all the way up there to North London. And it's just this little bit, and it's got concrete bollards on it, and then people dump crap on it, but it's which is further up here, but we won't see it, I think, unless it's going to take us off.
Yeah,
that.
We're going to go straight over it rather than it'll be below us. I know the little roundabout you mean, it's further.
Also, something else. Again, this is very distant from cars. Well, actually, sort of, yes, it is. The Trellick Tower.
Since
we're sort of talking about 60s architecture, the Trellick Tower, very iconic. It's coming up over there, isn't it? With side onto it.
It's got that incredible separate ladder.
Yeah, sort of lift shaft thing.
Lift shaft thing.
With this funny little pod at the top,
And there's an identical one to it as well in East London, so between Hackney and Bow.
Well, that was built first.
Was
like the prototype for this.
When did you become a building expert?
I don't know what I'm talking about. These are the only things I know. Don't ask me any further questions. Except this was designed by an architect called Erno Goldfinger.
Yes.
Oh, yes.
Who gave his name to the villain in Ian Fleming's James Bond.
That's unfortunate, isn't it?
Well, the story goes that Goldfinger built some very, at the time, modern houses in Hampstead, where Ian Fleming lived. And Fleming hated Goldfinger for doing this so much, he named his villain after him in his next book. Goldfinger was furious. He was a famously short-tempered man, as well as, I think, a famously... Oh, he was short in the books, because he was actually tall in real life, I think. Someone will write in and complain about this. There's the Trellick Tower. Fleming made him a short man, just to spite him. And Goldfinger objected and tried to get the book's publication stopped, and his name changed. And Fleming said, all right, I'll change his name to Goldprick. And in the end, it just went ahead with the original intended name.
That's fantastic.
So there's a sort of car connection there if you make an enormous leap to James Bond in an Aston Martin.
I can't give too much away, but as we're talking about Bond, there'll be something a little later, I think.
Okay, I wonder if that how does that tie into my choice? Hey, we'll find out before too long.
If Zog and I have come up with different locations, great.
In the greater Slough area.
Yeah, I mean, of all the places in the world.
Hey, Slough's a big place, come on.
It is. And if Zog and I come up with the same place, even better, right?
We'll know we both make good choices.
Yeah. Well, when we get very near to Slough, Z, we'll make a view on whether we're going to go to my place first or your place first.
Yeah, we'll have to do a process of... We'll read out postcodes first, and then road, and then place on road. Okay, where are they?
I'm not sure I've got the postcode of my place. I know the name of the road.
So if you haven't got the postcode, that might give me a clue. I'm not even going to voice this thought. I'm not going to say it. It's just something came to mind. But Richard, I was just wondering, you know, what comes next for you career-wise? Because now the Grand Tour has finally wrapped up for the last time, and Clarkson May and Hammond are going separate ways. You know, this is the moment. This is the moment, Richard, where you have a choice. Are you going to write the tell-all, warts and all story of Top Gear? Tell all the stories that couldn't be told until now.
Oh, sorry, Zog, not to deflect from your question, but there, this building here, was called the BBC Energy Centre, right by the A40 here as we go past. That was for many years the Top Gear office on the top floor there.
Yes.
So that is where a lot of... And the big silver building behind it, the BBC White City building, was where the Top Gear office was before that, the London office. And that is where
all the stories would have happened.
Yeah, all the sort of stupid decisions that led to the stories and the features on the show. That was where that all happened. In that building back there.
And I wasn't even thinking of that when I raised it.
No, because as you started saying it, I was a bit like, oh, we're coming up to another little landmark I can point out.
How did I plan that?
It's uncanny. True?
And if I hadn't just explained that it was coincidence, I might have been able to persuade you that I was planned, but I've now entirely blown that by saying the first thing that came into my head.
I thought you were,
there we go.
For a minute, you were queuing me up the way that Des O'Connor used to do to guests on his chat show. Do you remember he'd always go... like he'd have, I don't know, Les Dawson on, and he'd go, Les, out of nowhere, he'd just go, Les, you're not very good at ironing, are you? And he'd go, oh, I tell you what, the wife, and he'd just be like, this has come from nowhere, because clearly, in pre-chat with the guest, the producer has found out that Les Dawson's got a funny story about ironing, but the way that Des O'Connor would just go, oh, Les, so your new series starts next week, but how are you at ironing? And you just go, there's no connection between these two things except you're queuing up an anecdote.
Well, yeah, you've got to work, you've got to do a bit of work to make those links happen sometimes, don't you? But some presenters make it seem easier than others.
Yes. Yes.
So are you going to write the tell-all book, or are you going to write a sitcom based on a fictionalised motoring lifestyle show, in which every week things go comically wrong and you're dealing with difficult hosts and wonderful interesting people, and maybe this sitcom is inspired by Top Gear, maybe it's not.
Inspired by real events.
Yeah, I think these are two clearly, these are two strong directions for writers to go in, exploiting their recent history, their backstories.
They always say write about what you know, don't they? Funnily enough, for years I've had an idea for a sitcom that's not about Top Gear, but is fed by my experiences of working on a long-running show that sort of gradually gets more and more popular, and the sort of chaos and strangeness that results from that. And I've just never got round to it. It was going to be based around a cookery show.
Yeah.
Because I thought, I won't make it too on the nose. Yeah. And the cookery show has, you know, this sort of general kind of shambolic, freewheeling nature, but seems to just keep getting more popular, almost despite itself. And I've never got round to it. And there's a friend of mine who I told this to, who I used to work with, and every time I see him, which isn't that often, he goes, have you written that sitcom yet? And I always have to go, no. Well, you should do that, you know. Yeah, I know.
Maybe you should take seriously the idea that it will be worth writing. I mean, yeah, you may have other things that it's more worth your time writing. I don't know.
Well,
It's got legs, surely. It has potential.
I'd love to if only people would make sitcoms anymore.
I was about to say...
Which is a bit of a problem, because I started watching last night Hacks. Have you seen that?
I think it's fantastic.
I've only watched the first ep, and it didn't wow me, but I will stick with it, because I think it's unfair to just dismiss the show after the first episode. But what immediately struck me is that, because it just won, the reason I started watching it, because I wasn't really
just
familiar with it.
An Emmy, didn't it?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And it won an Emmy for, in the comedy category, I can't remember which specific award, but it was for comedy. And I was watching it, and I was just like, I like the performances in this, I can see where the characters could go, this is all really interesting, but I'm not hearing any jokes as such.
Yes.
It's less a sitcom, more a comedy drama, I would say.
I agree. I mean, people don't really... I mean, old school sitcoms, you know, that's just a kind of programme that isn't made anymore. You don't... I mean, something like Superstore, I think, is probably the last...
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Sort of oldest, I think it was sort of the last old school sitcom. And also, really, really good show. I sort of watched the first few episodes, I think not having very high expectations. And again, now that's a really terrific comedy.
I really like the theme tune as well. It's got a very synthy theme tune.
Yes, and that's also a really interesting example of the massive divergence in trends in theme music between different kinds of programme. What I'm thinking of is streaming and American comedies, increasingly... very short theme tunes.
Yeah.
Veep's a good example. Never a particularly long theme tune to start with. It got shorter as the series went on.
Yeah.
And it was just a few bars at the end. Superstar, absolutely perfect example. That is it's a two-bar, 16-beat theme. That's it. It's just a two-bar.
Just gets you into it, doesn't it? It's
quite. It's quite long was the theme tune to Seinfeld then? It was just two bass notes. Pick it up, bomb, bomb. Three notes.
But it was different each week.
Uh-huh. Yes.
Fair enough.
The guy that recorded the theme music recorded a live version of the theme music for each show. So it's just a bit of bass and drums, a couple of bars, but it was different every week. But Superstories, this is an amazing show that sort of works because of.
I think it's got that typical American sitcom, very, very tight writing.
It does.
They don't leave many gaps between jokes, and the cast are very good as well, I think.
Terrific characters, very, very well drawn characters.
But Schitt's Creek as well, have you watched that?
Yeah, also.
There's a sitcom. And.
Honestly, I resisted watching it for at least a couple of years just because it was called Schitt's Creek. And I thought, okay, this is such an obvious, you know, you've gone with such an obvious, you know, gag in your title. The show can't be that good. And boy, was I wrong. No, really, really great show.
Have you seen, though, it's a BBC Three show, though I think they're now showing it on One, and it's on iPlayer. Daddy Issues.
I haven't, no.
Which is much closer to an old-fashioned sitcom. I mean, it's not in front of a studio audience or anything, but nothing is anymore. But it's much more towards sitcom than comedy drama. Mm. And it's got David Morrissey, an excellent actor, playing a very downbeat dad. Mm. And he's superb in it.
So, as you can hear, the conversation has gone a little off-topic in terms of cars. So, while the boys have that conversation, here's a list of some of the notable people who've appeared on Gareth Jones on Speed over the years. My two sons, Tycho and Indigo Jones. My pals, Chris Ryan, Phil Williams, Summer Etta, Andrew Stanning, Ben Roberts, Mark Adams, Tim Edmonds and Damien Sung. We've had loads of journalists on the show and motor industry related people. John Hindorf, Sue Nelson, Elisa Artioli, the woman who the Lotus was named after, the queen of F1 PR, Anne Bradshaw, Tony Aquila, the lunatic and utterly fascinating head of Canoe, and Chris Brown from F1 in Pubs. We've had a few motoring journalists on the programme over the years as well. Chris Burdick, Chris Harris, Mark Gallagher, Phil McNamara from Car Magazine, Phil Huff, Tim Pollard also from Car Magazine, the late, great Sue Baker, Alex Grant, Steve Cropley, Chaz Hallett, Johnny Smith and Nihal Arthur Nayaka. You might want to listen back to earlier episodes to hear these people and their valuable contribution to the programme. We've also had some rather amazing racing drivers on the programme. Who remembers me singing the Finnish national anthem with Heikki Kovalainen? Mika Salo, who I bumped into in Dubai. Thomas Enger, Nico Hülkenberg, Neil Gianni, Johnny Herbert, Damon Hill, Johnny Molum, Lewis Hamilton, Jenson Button, Nelson Piquet Jr., Jos Verstappen, Ricardo Patrese, Anthony Davidson, Sam Bird, Salvador Duran, and John Watson. Gareth Jones on Speed, episode 500! Wow! We now return you to our journey across London, where Richard and Zog are still talking about sitcoms.
Yeah, you can't do an old-school sitcom anymore. You can't do a show with a live audience and, you know, that kind of setup. But there is still the evolution of the sitcom.
Mm.
And I think, yeah, and a long-running TV show could be a good setting. Yeah, you must have a lot of material to draw on there.
It was either that or my sort of parallel version of it was the host of a long-running kids or sort of family-friendly TV show with a huge cat, like a man in a cat costume, like a football mascot, is part of the show. And then the show gets cancelled because the host does something bad. And his only friend left in the world is the big cat. And he's sitting in the pub with the big cat. And you start to realise that perhaps the big cat is in fact just in his imagination. Okay. Because he's lost his mind. But I couldn't quite work out where it goes from there.
Like a Harvey-related yes. thing for the modern...
Exactly.
I'm enjoying the conversation, but can we talk about cars briefly?
Oh, yeah.
While we're here.
That's just a level crossing, by the way.
I know, that's why we're sitting still here. I don't think I've ever sat at this level crossing before. It's at Acton Central Station. We're not going anywhere until those red lights stop flashing. My question is about Land Rovers, Richard.
Yes.
Because, you know, Land Rover are doing this whole reprofiling as JLR and Discovery as a brand and Range Rover as a brand and Defender as a brand.
Yeah.
Where does Velar fit in?
Well, that's a Range Rover.
It's a Range Rover.
Yeah, so
Velar.
It's Range Rover Evoque, Range Rover Velar, Range Rover Sport, Range Rover, just Range Rover.
Right.
It's confusing. I'd love to have been in the meetings where they decided it made sense, because I think to the consumer who's not paying attention so much, it's maybe it makes less sense. Unless their research says that, in fact, because no one says, what have you got? Oh, I've got a Land Rover, Range Rover. They're just Range Rovers.
Yeah.
And then they would use, you know, what have you got? Oh, I've got an Evoque. I've got a Velar. And I think people chop off the...
Yeah.
So I understand why they sort of shuffle Land Rover into the background a little bit. But... I do find it a bit confusing, and I think when you go to their website now and it just presents you with three panels, so Range Rover, Defender, Discovery on them, if you were just sort of browsing, you might go, oh, well, I don't know, I haven't decided yet, but it sort of forces you down a pipe. But whether that's what they've figured out from their research, that that's how people buy it. If you're in the market for a Range Rover Sport, you wouldn't consider a Defender or a Discovery. Maybe that's the case. But I can't believe that's true for Defender and Discovery, because the Defender has sort of basically almost killed the full-size Discovery because it does the same job. And I gather the next Discovery... is going to do something about that by sort of shuffling away from the Defender territory. But, yeah, it's a weird one.
The problem is that I don't see the name Sport as a brand for a car. Velar, yeah, that's a Velar, right?
Yeah.
That's not a Discovery. That's not a Sport. That's a Discovery Sport.
Yeah,
I think, and if there's a Range Rover Sport, is there going to be someone else Sport? You can't have Sport, because everyone uses Sport. It's in SUV. It's the shorthand, isn't it? And I think the Discovery Sport has to find a new name. It has to be the Discovery Freelander or something awkward like that.
Well, the Freelander is coming back, but possibly only for China.
Yes.
Because I think it's a pretty solid name.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think they felt they needed a clean break and to try and sort of create some kind of relationship with the big Discovery back when, you know, that was still, I guess, when the Discovery 4 was around, which had a sort of had the place to itself, because there was no Defender, new Defender at that point. The old Defender was obviously a bit of an anachronism.
A JLR all right, because it seems to be, sales of SUVs have crashed. Oh, sales of Range Rovers are suddenly massive. Oh, the supply chain's fixed. Oh, they're not going to make petrol engine Jaguars anymore. It seems to be swinging violently from one place to another.
It's hard to know for sure. I mean, clearly, the big Range Rover seems to do all right. You do see them around a lot, don't you? Which, considering you can't get into one now for under 100 grand... that's a lot of money going into their back pocket, even once they've written off all the costs associated with it. So it's...
naming thing breaks down there again, doesn't it? Because it's a Range Rover what? It's a Range Rover Range Rover?
Well, that's the bit where it does get confusing. Yeah. It's why people, you know, on the internet call it the full fat Range Rover and things like that, because otherwise you go, what sort? I don't know. Is JLR okay? See how this Jag thing pans out. Not that it really is the crux of the business. As long as they can see, you know, they keep selling as many Defenders as they can make, which seems to be the case at the moment, they're probably still just keeping in business.
Well, is that, they don't go the way of British Leyland. I mean, someone will, even if they can't sustain it, someone will buy them up, won't they?
I think Land Rover as a name has a lot of equity. I don't know that anyone would particularly want Jaguar, because it's almost lost its way a little bit. Although you don't know, do you? Because it's like, at least people have heard of it.
Yeah.
You know, it takes years to set up a new name and get people to cotton onto it. Look at Lexus. And then, you know, Hyundai is still plugging away with Genesis, but I'm not sure, particularly because Genesis isn't a unique word to them. I'm not sure everyone's completely cottoned onto that. So I'm not sure this is where you want to go.
I'm not sure either.
This looks like there's some shops.
I'm going to... I see a cyclist. Out of the way, Audi. Yes, just somehow seems to suggest going left there, but there was no escape. There is an escape.
Oh, there is. Oh, sorry.
Yeah, there truly is. Yes.
Oh, it looked like we were just going to a car park for that restaurant.
It really did.
Oh, hello. Now my phone's ringing.
Pause if you want to take a call.
No, it's all right. I'll call them back. Where are we now? Acton.
Acton, we are. Yes, very close to where Violet lived for many, 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 many years. I used to come round here, see her mum. Right, do people not wave to each other when you've got the same very interesting car these days?
I don't know. I mean, if I drive my Defender, which I haven't done for a long time, but when I finally dig it out of storage, old Defender people wave to each other.
Right. Do Porsche drivers wave to each other, Zog?
Sometimes, yeah, I'd say sometimes. About half the time.
Because I passed three Citroen C4 Cactuses like mine on the way down. And I waved to everybody and nobody waved back. I'm quite disappointed.
I think if you hold on to this for a while and as the numbers thin out a bit, the remaining people may be, you know, they'll be more sort of hardcore loyalists. Yeah. Your Cactus constituency will become more wave friendly. It's nothing worse, and I have done this because I was a bit, when I got my Defender, I had it when I had a Smart Roadster. Smart people wave to each other.
Yeah, yeah.
But I always felt a bit icky about it somehow. I was like, we've just got the same car. We're not mates. What are you doing? And but then I sort of, with the Defender thing, I was like, well, you know what? I'm on board with this.
Well, the psychology is that you are acknowledging someone else's taste being good by sanctioning it with your own behaviour. You're sanctioning your own choice by acknowledging someone else's similar choice. It's, it's like addicts who support each other. I'm doing the bad thing, so you can do a bad thing too, and that's okay, it's normal. It's the same thing, isn't it?
But as you discovered with your denied waves to C4 Cactus people, there's nothing worse than a wave that's not returned. You feel very sort of left out, hung out to dry.
Yeah, dejected.
And particularly I feel that with Defenders. When I start going, oh, I'll wave, I'll get into it, I'll wave, because it looks rude if you don't. And then I've waved at people in Defenders. Often I've found it's because it's like it's a forestry commission car or something, and whoever's driving it is only doing it for work.
Yeah.
They're not fully invested. No, they'd probably rather have a Ford Ranger because it's more comfortable. But and then you just feel really sort of like, have you ever gone up to somebody you think it's a friend, someone you know, and you go, hey, and then realise it's not?
Oh, yes. All the time.
Or I've done it as well, having worked in sort of places where television's made, I've done it and gone, hey, and then realised it's someone who presents the news or something.
Yeah, yeah,
I don't know
it's...
them at all, I just recognise them because they're off the telly.
Can happen. Happens to me the other way as well. People occasionally come over and go, hiya, you good? Yeah, fine.
Yeah?
Yeah, hello.
A dip into the archive of Gareth Jones on Speed.
Hello! This is Jackie Stewart. Welcome to the brand new interactive series of Gareth Jones on Speed. Using the power of thought, you're about to decide whether to hear the first episode of the new series or to listen to 30 minutes of me moaning on about the FIA again. Vote now! Ugh, you bunch of bastards!
Gareth Jones on Speed!
Hello there, it's the Adrian Newibot here. I have dug deep into the Gareth Jones on Speed archive, which I keep in a corner of my brain that I am not using to calculate aerodynamics and wind flow, and found this moment from episode 78 where Gareth, Richard, and Zog were discussing the collapse of a Honda F1 team. As a wise man once said, making predictions is very difficult, especially when about the future.
Will Honda come back to life? Is somebody going to buy them? Will there be...
Well, there have been a few rumors.
Son of Honda?
Yeah, the rumours are. The first one was that Carlos...
Fat boy Slim.
Well, it was the House Martins. It was all of them were going to buy the Honda team.
Carlos Slim. The possibility of there being a Mexican team in the sport, I love it. Yeah. I think... It's a Pedro Rodriguez thing, apart from anything. I've got a bit of affection for both the Rodriguez brothers and their
historical feats in
sports racing cars.
Which are
Pedro Rodriguez, of course, legendarily driving the Porsche 917, spectacular in the wet, in particular. Plus, you know, how could you not like the possibility of the whole kind of tequila shot thing for celebrating victory?
Why?
I'm just saying that, you know, if you wanted to party with a team, I think you'd want to party with the Mexicans.
That's one option. Who else might? I thought there was some Middle Eastern money.
David Richards.
David Richards. Yes. Yeah.
Now, because hang on, actually, because Fatboy Slim has actually officially said, I'm not buying a Honda team, hasn't he?
That's right. He's come out this week and said
he's done a kind of Dragon's Den. I'm out. So that means yes, possibly Middle Eastern money involving David Richards.
David Richards was interested in buying the Honda team. And that the money he was using to do it was coming from a Middle Eastern group, a finance group from Kuwait. Mm-hmm. The same finance group, well, investment group is the word I'm looking for, from Kuwait, that bought Aston Martin.
Yeah.
So suddenly started putting 4 and 6 together and I got 11-9. And I thought, God, if it's the same group, perhaps they're looking to take their brand, which is the Aston Martin brand, into Formula One. ProDrive would run the team, but can you imagine an Aston Martin Formula One team? How exciting would that be?
The problem I see with all this is simply that, you know, Aston Martin are laying people off. I just can't see there being any Dave Richards Aston Martin related F1 project while they're laying people off. The other rumour, of course, was there was this story that maybe Michael Schumacher was going to somehow be involved.
That would be interesting, wouldn't it?
He's always said that he wasn't interested in getting into managing a team or, you know.
You know what he's like. You know what he's like, though. So, who are you going to put in the team? Well, obviously, I would be the driver. And in terms of your strategist, will that be Ross Brawn? No, it will be me.
Yeah.
and the car? I will also drive the car. I will refuel it. It will be Team Schumacher. I will be the team.
He'd probably win as well. Well, if you wanted driving a driver cars. To design your car, you'd probably pick Schumacher.
Yeah.
Well, that's... On your best behaviour, new owner's going to be here any second. Who'd have thought it? Schumacher buying Honda F1. What an honour. We're about to get a lesson from the master, boys. Right, here he is now. Mr. Schumacher.
Oh, please, just call me Ralph.
That old
Gareth Jones on Speed, featuring Sniff Petrol.
And there'll be more clips from the Gareth Jones on Speed archive soon. But now we return you to our journey across London, where Zog, Richard and I have just noticed the future of public transport that's here today.
Ooh, hydrogen bus. Hydrogen fuel cell bus. In West London, they just came to some routes in North London fairly recently as well. I'm very pleased.
Where are they getting their hydrogen from then? Because...
Ineos, I think, probably.
But they've closed down all of the
hydrogen stations.
Publicly accessible hydrogen stations, because TV's James May has had not one but two Toyota Mirais.
Wow.
I mean, he leased them, he didn't buy them outright, but they just found it an increasing pain in the arse to run them because effectively sort of had to, I think latterly, just had to drive to Heathrow Airport when he wanted some hydrogen.
I think they might
have closed that now, I don't know for sure, but... It's definitely, there are fewer now than there were.
Yeah, there used to be one not far from where I was in North London. Where was it? Sort of not quite Hendon. But there was one up there that I used a couple of times. He lives in Hammersmith, doesn't he?
Yeah.
James May. So, yeah, Heathrow is not a billion miles away, but that's a drag. And yet you still hear reports that hydrogen is coming, particularly for heavy goods vehicles and public service vehicles. Less so for... personal transporter.
Yeah,
I don't
see it. Why would we have to go to the trouble of building this infrastructure for a quite tricky thing to transport?
When hard to store. Yeah. You know, if you think about the lifestyle, hydrogen is a way of storing energy. Rather, it's not a source of energy,
yeah,
because we don't, you know, get it easily out of the ground or anything. You have to make it, and it costs energy to make it. So it is a store of energy, like a battery or a flywheel. And I don't think it's a particularly good way of storing energy. There are some use cases where it makes more sense than others. Yeah.
That's your get-out clause. I like that. So there are some use cases where
But the buses, public service vehicles, like you see, the things that are, first of all, physically bigger vehicles, where having a hydrogen tank is less of an issue, and also where where it's easier to have your own fueling, recharging infrastructure.
Yeah.
You know, so bus depots can justify the cost of having their own refueling hardware.
Coming back to INEOS and hydrogen, I know INEOS are alleged to be developing a fuel cell version of the Grand Marnier, the Grenadier.
Yeah.
And apparently INEOS produce the vast majority of the hydrogen that's used in the UK as a side product of some other chemical processes that they make their money off of.
Some kind of cracking, maybe?
Yeah, I don't know. That's kind of free money for them, isn't it? Free. Look, we're doing more than 30 miles per hour, boys. Well, we're not yet. Now we are.
Since we're on the Magical Mystery Tour,
yes,
and not to make it all about me, but we're about to go past the Grand Tour office, or where it was, not. But when we set up speed cameras, watch out. I can't remember what the speed limit is.
40.
Oh, you're right.
Yeah.
Sorry, I thought it was 30. I used to drive down this road a lot, but
yeah,
clearly I've forgotten the speed limit. Yeah, so just up here, when we get to the Volvo garage, behind the Volvo garage is Power Road Studios. And that
Power
was
where, Road.
Yeah, I know. It was
it
somehow
used to be a power station, didn't it?
Oh, is that why?
I think so, yeah.
For years, there's still a Honda garage, the last of them, there's still a Honda garage here, but this used to be the headquarters of Honda UK as well, on this site. So for years, Honda's address was Power Road, Chiswick. But there, you can't really see it very well, there's a building there that was the Grand Tour office. When the Grand Tour was set up, that was the original office for the first three series when we were doing the travelling tent and all that malarkey. That is where the Grand Tour was based. So all the stuff on the Grand Tour, that was all thought up in that building there.
I think there also was, don't know whether it still is, but there used to be a place called, I think, GP Racewear, just...
Oh,
in that block over there?
Yeah.
I bought a helmet from there a few years ago.
I'm just looking at this famous Peugeot dealership on the Chiswick roundabout at the moment. Alex and I were having a conversation the other week about just how good Peugeot's exterior design is at the moment. I think that saloon, what's it called, the 4-0 something around there?
509? 508
is the bigger one. I think it looks absolutely... It's got such presence, such style.
Of course, that's not... That was... And even when I worked here, that was a Peugeot Citroën showroom.
Yeah, yeah.
And
yeah.
Stellantis has happened since then, and
yeah,
that's now got Fiat and Abarth, and
yeah.
I don't know if they've got Vauxhall in there as well, but it's a bit weird. There's a showroom near where I live that's all of them. Vauxhall,
wow.
Fiat, Peugeot Citroën. And it's very confusing seeing all those badges on a building together. Still forget,
yeah,
they're all part of the same group.
Oh, did the idea that Vauxhall Opel and Peugeot and Fiat are all the same people now is just... It makes no sense to me at all. I'm still recovering from the fact that Jaguars aren't Fords anymore. Call me old school.
Talking as we were about fueling, and not to be too nerdy about it, but I'm looking at your trip computer here on the central screen in,
yep,
your Cactus.
Yeah.
Your car really doing 62.7 miles to the gallon.
Yes, it blooming is.
Crikey, over 282 miles. That's very good.
It's really great, isn't it?
Wow.
Yeah. I couldn't believe
look,
it.
There's a beach buggy.
Oh,
there's two.
Two. Ooh, dune buggy. Just that Malibu dune. What are they? Manx.
Oh, Manx. I don't know. I don't know
ooh,
enough about them. But yeah, that's a
lovely. There was
a
parade of dune buggies in Conwy and Llandudno last week. I missed it, but everybody told me about it. I wish I'd seen it. West London Volkswagen. Not much longer, mate, the way things are going. So we just passed the big VW dealership.
I've got a Mark 1 Golf GTI in the showroom.
Mm. Ooh, lovely. Mm. That's lovely. Isn't it dark, suddenly?
Yeah, it looks like it might be about to absolutely buck it down.
Yeah. Yeah, black skies. Mind you, we are underneath the Westway.
Yes, also under a flyover.
We should be singing Clash songs, right? They were written under this bit of concrete, weren't they?
Interesting that, I mean, it's only it's a 7:15. All the lights go off in the Kia garage here, and they just leave the lights on the cars, like the DRLs and the back lights. It's obviously a design choice they've made.
But big Kia is a big car,
isn't
it?
The EV9, it is a big car. Yeah.
I saw an Explorer on the road the other day.
Really?
Yeah, on the way back from Preston.
Oh.
And it's a brick. It makes the Range Rover look like a Dove soap bar.
How big does it look in real life?
Pretty big. Not as big as a Range Rover.
Hmm.
Bigger than the Discovery Sport. Not as tall as a Discovery. See, this is where the naming falls down again, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And
we know about cars. I mean, imagine if you're a normal person who just wants a car.
Yeah.
Trying to get your head around the nuances of that, I think, is tricky.
Yeah. And this is where we have to leave it for now. In our next edition, Richard, Zog and I revisit some of our favourite moments in the show's history and finally reach the two mysterious car-related destinations that Zog and I have chosen, bringing our trip to an end. All that and more in Gareth Jones on Speed, episode 500, part 3, available 7 days after this one. See you there.
If you enjoyed this show, then please like, share and subscribe. For information on how to contact the show, see pictures, read song lyrics, follow us on social media, or to sponsor this podcast, go to garethjones.tv. Gareth Jones on Speed is made in Wales by Whiz Bang.
Gareth Jones on Speed, episode 500! Wow!